Hello, funky listeners, and welcome to the 178th episode, yes, of Funk Radio.
Welcome to Funk Radio?
Welcome to my voice. Yeah.
Yes.
This is your host, Kyle, and I think this is episode 178. I'm bad at counting, so...
Yes, you are correct.
Yeah.
I've confirmed.
Cool.
And I'm Peter, by the way.
Hi, Peter. Hi. So... For this episode, it's basically getting towards the end of the flaming train wreck filled with dead Harambes, known as 2016.
That's somebody who died in 2016.
There you go. We should play his album.
God damn it.
He just dropped an EP before he died. As he was dying, Harambe. He's like, listen to my mixtape. Terrible. Anyways, yes, so since 2016 has for about 99% of humanity been a terrible year, we thought we would try to cap off the year a little bit by talking about everyone that died this year.
To clarify, major musicians who died this year.
Yes, not everyone.
Not everyone.
Not every human being on Earth. That would take a long time to read. A lot of famous musicians have died this year. A lot of musicians have died young this year, relatively. And so we thought it only appropriate to kind of do a 2016 in memoriam for some artists that died that kind of fall into our wheelhouse. And now, unfortunately, we couldn't cover everyone that, even every musician that died, because that's a lot of people. We picked ones that, you know, had relevance to us or American culture or what have you.
Basically, the ones we care about.
Terrible. Yes, everyone else we don't care about. So we're going to kind of just go in chronological order, as best we can, and talk about some of the artists that have left us, and how they were significant, you know, from a musical standpoint. So, first off, I guess, is the one that I think shocked a lot of people very early on was David Bowie. He died January 10th, and he was 69. So, not young, not super old, but apparently he was battling for the last 18 months prior to his death with cancer that was very aggressive, and he lost said battle in January. Hmm. In a bittersweet thing, that was kind of nice. I guess when he passed away, he was surrounded by his family. That's comforting to know, I suppose. For those of you that don't know who David Bowie is, he was, I know, who, what, like all five people in the world.
Who listen to this podcast.
the only five people in the world that don't know who he is are also the only five people that listen to us.
Well, you're about to learn something new, listeners.
Yeah. Terrible. For those of you that don't know who David Bowie was, he was a famous rock musician starting in late 60s, really. Arguably, he kind of sent rock into this new 70s direction with his sound by incorporating jazz, dance, electronic, some soul, and kind of fusing it together into a very unique David Bowie sound.
So David Bowie wasn't even really his name. It was just the name he gave to that mix of sound that he invented. He said, this sounds like David Bowie. I'm going to name myself that. Is that how it happened?
Pretty much. No, but you're not too far off. He actually did have what you could call like a stage personas. One of his stage personas was called Ziggy Stardust. And in these different personas usually he created around different albums or different songs he would make. And he was very, for lack of a better term, flamboyant on stage, had a big stage presence. He was kind of one of the forefathers of that whole, like, almost pseudo cross-dressing kind of, you know, heavy makeup kind of styles about him. Mm-hmm. That would then lead to other bands like Kiss and even 80s. Rock, kind of copying that in a way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he had a lot of famous albums. Space Odyssey in 69, The Man Who Sold the World, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. Yeah, lots of stuff. A lot of famous singles as well. Fame, Heroes. That song, We Can Be Heroes. He was British, by the way. I didn't just do that accent for no reason.
We can be heroes. This is the worst memorial ever so far. We've only been doing this for like 5 minutes.
I know, right? Everyone's dead and we're going to make fun of all of them. No, sorry. God. Terrible. So yeah, tons of famous songs, hugely famous. The thing I think a lot of people underestimated about Bowie too, that what people were kind of reminded of in his passing, was just how influential he was outside of just music. He was influential in fashion, he was influential in movies, he was influential kind of in just the direction American and British pop culture took in the 70s. And he was, for lack of a better term, he was really kind of like a pop icon in that way. He was Michael Jackson before Michael Jackson, I guess. But, yeah, so another, I guess, not sad thing, but bittersweet thing surrounding his death is, at the time of his death, he was working on his latest album, Black Star, that literally was released after he died.
So he was able to finish it.
Yeah, it was all finished and mastered. January, it came out January 8th. So it came out two days
before he died. Wow.
He passed away. Similar to what we do in our show, we want to play little clips of songs from all these artists, and in picking a song for David Bowie for us to play a snippet of, it was really hard because he had so many different songs, and at first I wanted to play something really iconic, but I remember after he passed away, obviously people were mourning and all that, and one of the radio stations I listened to on XM played one of his singles from this album Black Star called Lazarus, and I was like, holy shit, this song sounds really good. Which kind of made me all the more sad, I guess. But that being said, I want to play a little clip of his single Lazarus from his last album, Black Star, so you can see just how, what's the word, in tune and creative he was, basically up to his final breath kind of thing. I've got drama, can't be stolen. Everybody knows me now.
That's a good song. Yeah, and I think that was a good choice, too, to pick something from his final album as well. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
One last little tidbit, I guess. After Bowie's passing, his longtime producer and friend, Tony Visconti, wrote, quote, "He always did what he wanted to do, and he wanted to do it his way, and he wanted to do it the best way. His death was no different from his life, a work of art. He made Black Star for us, his parting gift. I knew for a year that this was the way it would be. I wasn't, however, prepared for it. He was an extraordinary man, full of love and life. He will always be with us. For now, it is appropriate to cry." A lot of people, obviously, very sad over his passing. I'm sure there were tears shed by fans as well as family members.
That's that's an interesting view on Black Star as well.
Yeah,
I guess if you have... I mean, if you're battling cancer for 18 months, that's plenty of time to like make your one last album. If you're suspecting that this may be the end.
Yeah. It was like his kind of swan song or whatever.
Yeah. So to do that like intentionally, that's kind of a cool concept, because I know, you know, so we did that episode about all those musicians that died like in their early years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Prematurely, basically. And I know on that one, I think we played for the most part like their last song that they wrote or produced or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in cases like that, it was almost always like unexpected that they died.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was intentional that they made it before they died. Whereas in this case, you know, maybe it was.
Yeah.
So that kind of puts it in a different light.
Exactly. It's almost like his musical will and testament kind of thing. Mm. So yeah, that's part of the reason I chose his last album rather than one of his original hits. Like I said, if you're one of the five people that don't know who he is, go research him. He's probably one of the most iconic rock musicians to ever, you know, live.
Wasn't that a thing within the last year or two? There was kind of that joke with Paul McCartney, how some young person on Twitter or something, like there was a new song that came out that featured Paul McCartney, and some young person was like, I don't know who this Paul McCartney guy is. He's like up and coming, or some shit like that. And that became like a joke. Did you hear about this at all?
No, that's amazing. God, what's wrong with the youth?
Yeah, it was basically, it was funny because the youth of today don't know anything about music, basically.
That's really sad. I know there's like a funny meme on the internet of like, you know, musically clueless teens saying like, oh, saying things like, oh, I love Pink Floyd. Which one's Pink? And like, or like, oh, I love Nirvana. She's so great. Stuff like that.
That's funny. Yeah. Should I talk about Maurice White?
Yeah.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
We can actually talk about it from a personal standpoint because we saw them.
Oh, that's right. I don't think he was there, though.
I don't think he was either, now that I remember that.
I remember there being a guy with them on stage. And when was this? This was
2013,
I think, maybe.
No, 2012. It was the summer. It was the summer right after we graduated.
Oh, and it was before we started the podcast. Yeah, okay. So I remember there being a guy who kind of looked like him, but it didn't, not completely, and I wasn't sure whether that was him or not. And then I remember researching after, and White wasn't touring with him at the time. I think he was battling something at the time. Yeah, he did actually pass away this year on February 4th at the age of 74. It looks like he died in his sleep after a long battle with Parkinson's that kind of goes back as far as the 90s. So he's been, you know, struggling with that for years. Obviously, and I'm wondering now, maybe that's what he was having it. Maybe that's why he wasn't touring with them at the point that we saw them. We did say Earth, Wind, and Fire, right? Was the band?
Yeah.
Did we? Okay, I don't remember whether we said that. If you're not aware of who Earth, Wind, and Fire is, basically they were, they were really at the forefront of, kind of like toward the end of funk music in the early 70s up to like the beginning, how funk kind of transitioned into disco in like the mid and late 70s.
Yeah.
They were really at the forefront of that, and I think they were really influential in that musical shift. So they're another one of these bands that's huge, and he was like the creator of that band, and I think he defined where a lot of that sound came from. Along with being the creator for the group, he was also a singer, he was a drummer, and he was a producer. And he was a main songwriter, so he was very involved in a lot of their big hits. Other members of the group included his brothers, Verdine and Fred. I believe there were more. I think the band was bigger than just them three, if I remember correctly. I think it was a fairly big group, actually, if I remember. But the group sold more than 90 million albums, earned 7 Grammys, and are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So in terms of a musical career, I mean, that's, it doesn't get much better than that. So regarding Maurice White's death, his brother Verdine, who I mentioned just a second ago, posted this on Facebook. He said, quote, "My brother, hero, and best friend Maurice White passed away peacefully last night in his sleep. While the world has lost another great musician and legend, our family asks that our privacy is respected as we start what will be a very difficult and life-changing transition in our lives. Thank you for your prayers and well wishes. Yours truly, Verdine White." So,
sadness.
That's that.
Parkinson's is a bitch. And unfortunately, unfortunately, someone who's so, something as physically demanding as, you know, being a lead singer in a band, having Parkinson's just makes that all the more difficult.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, I believe probably a couple years ago we talked about like how Earth, Wind, and Fire kind of got their start.
Oh,
where they were like, they were basically homeless, Mm-hmm. And they were doing some, I think they were, they, their first gig was like doing a soundtrack for some blaxploitation film. Mm-hmm. I don't remember which one it was, unfortunately. I don't think it was one of the big ones. It might have been. I just don't have it in front of me, so I couldn't say for sure. But it's kind of funny back then that they were completely broke, and they were like just trying to do a gig like that to pay the rent, and then eventually they became like one of the biggest, you know, bands in music history.
Yeah, exactly. So. On top of that, it says that actually Maurice White, before forming Earth, Wind, and Fire, was a session drummer at Chess Records. And he played drums on albums for, like, the Rolling Stones, B.B. King.
I did not know that.
Yeah. That's so, even before Earth, Wind, and Fire, he was kicking ass. So, that's cool. That's pretty cool.
Why don't we listen to a clip of... I don't think he released anything new. I mean, I think that the band has released new stuff in the last decade or two, but I'm not really aware of what it is, and I don't think he personally, that I know of, released anything recently, partially because of the Parkinson's. But you know what, listeners, we're gonna take a break for here for a second. You listen to a clip and we'll come back and tell you some facts rather than just a bunch of speculations, because that's our job. Yeah. So instead of playing something recent, we're going to play probably, I don't know if it's their biggest hit, but it's certainly one of their biggest, the song September. And if you don't know it by name, you'll almost certainly know it by sound. So here's a clip of that. Welcome back, listeners. That was September. Pretty fantastic song. I think it kind of speaks to that musical kind of transition as well that we were talking about, that they were really at the forefront of. Mm-hmm. So regarding a couple of facts, Earth, Wind, and Fire as a group, their latest album was from 2 years ago.
Wow.
In 2014, called Holiday.
Was it a holiday album?
It seems to be, yes. It's a Christmas album.
Appropriate.
Which is, yeah, that's funny. Maurice White, on the other hand, as a solo artist, his only album that he released on his own is just his own name.
Maurice White.
Yeah, and he released it in 1985. So, I wasn't sure. I wasn't quite sure, because I know, like, he is fairly entrepreneurial as, you know, in the music business. So I wasn't sure, like, because sometimes people like that have a lot of their own music on the side. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like he only did that one album and that was it. Kind of post the golden years of Earth, Wind, and Fire. So yeah, in terms of like newer stuff, there isn't a whole lot. I guess I was correct in my assumptions there. The song you just heard, September, came out in November of 1978. So that's that.
Yep.
Who are we talking about next, Mr. Kyle?
Next, we are talking about another artist that died. This artist died a little far earlier than most.
Age-wise, you mean?
Yeah. Not earlier in the year, earlier as in age-wise, sorry. And that is Fife Dog from A Tribe Called Quest. His real name is Malik Taylor, and he died March 23rd at the age of 45. Hmm. So he was not old. I don't know if we ever talked about A Tribe Called Quest on our show. They're a 90s rap group. They had some famous songs such as Bonita Applebum, which I love, Can I Kick It, I Left My Wallet in El Segundo, Check the Rhyme. They were fairly influential on rap in the 90s. Fife Dawg unfortunately passed away at 45. Although his cause of death is technically unknown, he struggled with diabetes for years, receiving a kidney transplant in 2008. And yeah, So I feel bad. I don't have as much to say about him as, say, like David Bowie, even though.
Well,
arguably,
they can't all be as. We can't have an entire list of David Bowies.
We'd be here for 2 hours, exactly.
That would be even more disappointing than this list is.
Touche.
Not that Five Dog's Death is not disappointing. I will. I need to stop talking.
It's okay.
So he was struggling with diabetes for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, and had a kidney transplant because of it. Sadness. Says the group, A Tribe Called Quest, released 6 albums between 1990 and 2016. The band broke up in 98 after releasing their 5th album. Their new album was released after the group reunited. I think the group pseudo-reunited partially due to Five Dog's Death, because their latest album was released after. I don't think includes him on a lot of the songs. So that may have been kind of a galvanizing factor for them.
I was about to say, what is the song that you chose?
I'm not
that familiar with their music, so.
This song I chose, Buggin' Out, it's off their 2nd album, The Low End Theory, which I think is arguably their most famous, which was released in 1991. I don't know, I just like this song. There's plenty of really great songs on that album, including Benita Applebaum. I just picked this one because, I don't know, it very much summed up the sound of A Tribe Called Quest to me. Plus, the video for it's pretty cool too, so if you listeners have a chance, check out the video.
If you listeners want to be viewers.
Yes.
But until then, I guess you can hear a little clip from Five Dog and A Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah. Surrounded, posted, just like a migraine pounding. You don't really fret, you stay in your sense. Camouflage your feeling of absolute tense. You're so off to another world deep in your mind. For people seem to take that as being unkind. Oh, yo, he's acting stank. Really on a regal. They have a lot of really great songs, good albums. So if they're a little bit out of your wheelhouse, music wise, I can encourage you to go check them out.
Maybe open up your wheelhouse and let them in.
Yeah, exactly. Roadhouse. They have a lot of, they do, they have a lot of good songs. They were very influential as a group. And they definitely kind of encompassed that kind of transition to that 90s rap sound, as opposed to the 80s, which, as we've discussed before, was very much more, I don't want to say seesay, but it was very much more static rhythm. A la, you know, Sugar Hill Gang, that kind of thing. By the transition of bands like A Tribe Called Quest, it kind of ushered in that era of rap when it had a lot more jazz influence and was very like smooth and like just kind of rolled off the tongue, sort of, if that makes sense. So yeah,
cool.
Another artist who was very influential in lots of things who passed away is Prince, who unfortunately passed away April 2nd. And he was only 57, so another artist that died fairly young.
I didn't know he was that young.
Yeah, I didn't either. I mean, he was huge in the 80s, like Michael Jackson huge. Obviously he was younger back then. But yeah, he was only 57.
He's just always been 57.
Shut up. Apparently he was at his recording studio in Minneapolis. Emergency personnel were called because they basically found him not breathing.
Yikes. Yeah. In the music studio?
I believe it was like in the elevator to the studio or something, if I remember correctly, but don't quote me.
Okay.
Funk
Radio, don't quote us.
Yeah, really, that should be our motto. Yeah, unfortunately, it came about after his passing that he had been ill for many weeks prior, and due to his insane schedule of touring and recording and stuff, kind of wasn't really taking care of himself as well as he probably should have been. And although they still never completely determined the cause of death, he did have some kind of ongoing medical problems that may or may not have been exacerbated by his workaholicism. But yeah, he passed away at his studio in Paisley Park. And for those of you that don't know Prince, all four people, he was...
In the time that this episode has been going, we lost one of our listeners.
Exactly. They're just like, oh, yeah, we're done.
They got bored.
Exactly. terrible. He was a huge influential artist who combined pretty much every genre on the face of the earth, soul, funk, rock, R&B, disco, hip-hop, into a very successful career with a lot of famous songs like Doves Don't Cry, Kiss, Purple Rain. He made a movie.
When Doves Cry. Sorry to correct you.
What did I say?
You said Doves Don't Cry.
Doves Don't Cry, goddammit!
But when they do...
Yes.
There's that song.
Doves Don't Go to Heaven. All dogs go to heaven. Whatever. And yeah, he even directed and starred in a movie called Purple Rain that was basically sort of a biopic of his own life.
Oh, yeah.
Which won an Academy Award for Best Original Song Score for the song Purple Rain.
Well, geez, I would hope so.
You know, right? It'd be like if Michael Jackson made a movie about Michael Jackson and all the songs were just Michael Jackson. They're probably going to win.
Yeah.
So yeah, he won an Academy Award. He won a Golden Globe for Best Original Song for the Happy Feet song, The Song of the Heart. And he's won 7 Grammys. So, another incredibly successful career.
That seems interesting, just commenting both on him and David Bowie. It seems like the people who become legendary are the ones who can successfully straddle like all these different genres and mix them together into their own sound. Because it seems like, obviously, the more types of music you can touch, the bigger your audience is going to be.
Oh, of course.
So it makes sense that those who don't like limit themselves to one sound or one genre are the ones who make it big.
Exactly. Now, I know we talked about, I'm 85% sure we talked about this on the show before, his dispute with his record label, in which he basically changed his name to the artist formerly known as Prince.
Oh yeah, I think we talked about that not too long ago.
Yeah, he got in a fight with his record label in 93 with Warner Brothers, and so he changed his name basically because they argued, oh well, we own your name, we own your art, and he's like, fine, I'll change my name, screw you. And he released he actually, under this new persona, actually began releasing more albums at a faster pace to kind of remove himself from those contractual obligations under Warner Brothers. He released 5 records between 94 and 96.
Dang.
Just to be Holy like, fuck you, I'm going to make more better music. Blackjack and Hookers.
Wow.
It said... in 2000, he began referring to himself as Prince again and released 16 albums after that.
Good Lord.
Including the platinum-selling Musicology in 2004. I remember Musicology. That was huge. I was, 14 then? God, I'm old. It says that it's likely that he died from a fentanyl overdose at his Paisley Park studio. Fentanyl, for those of you who don't know, is a pain medication. So
he was basically taking a bunch of that to help with his issues that he was ignoring.
Exactly.
More or less.
And unfortunately passed away because of that. What the... sadness. Another interesting thing that I was reading as well, his remains were cremated, and they were actually placed into a custom 3D printed urn that is shaped like his Paisley Park home.
Oh, wow.
So he basically had his remains put into a tiny dollhouse of his own house.
That's kind of creepy, but also really cool.
Right? It says the urn was placed on display at the atrium of the Paisley Park complex in October of this year. There's a portion of his estate that is open to the public, so... Yeah. I could go on and on, just like I went on and on about David Bowie, about the influence Prince had on music and pop culture.
I know we there was some upset from a former listener
Yes.
The show that we didn't cover Prince's death at the time.
Yeah.
We had our reasons.
Which were basically that we forgot.
Well, we didn't forget. I think for me personally, it was that, and I think we've already mentioned this on the show, but like we, with everybody and their mother talking about Prince for weeks on end and like covering all his old stuff and everything, it's like, okay, everybody's already talking about Prince. Us talking about Prince isn't really going to add anything to that.
Yeah.
I guess that was my personal philosophy, was that like, unless we can do something that hundreds of thousands of people are not already doing, then what's the point? I think we can still respect his work and his life without just doing, I don't know. It was a thought, but I mean, I'm glad we're covering him now. But also that we're covering a lot of other people too. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you have a song that you chose for Prince.
Yeah, similar to David Bowie, there wasn't a lot. I mean, there was so much I wanted to pick from, but I didn't pick a song that he recently released, which maybe I could have or should have, I don't know. But I picked his song, I Would Die For You, because it's about death, and he died. No need to worry, no need to cry.
So, that was a clip of I Would Die For You by Prince. I guess it came off of Purple Rain,
yep.
Didn't it, Kyle?
Yep.
In 1984.
Exactly.
And it was also in the movie.
Exactly. Facts. Yeah. No, I just like the song. So, do you have anything else to say about Mr. Prince? Do you think people call him Mr. Prince or Mr. P?
Not that I've ever heard.
Yeah. I just know he liked pancakes because of the Dave Chappelle skit where he liked pancakes.
Was that based on like a real story? I don't remember.
I have no idea, but I remember. I think he was in an episode of like that show, The New Girl, or something. The one with Zooey Deschanel.
Okay.
And he like was holding a plate of pancakes, and it was like in reference to that skit.
That's funny.
He was aware of it and poked fun at it. I don't know if he actually liked pancakes. It said that he was vegan and switched to vegetarian diet for most of his life. So, I guess if you're vegetarian, you can have pancakes.
So, apparently Prince released a song called Breakfast Can Wait in 2013.
That's amazing.
I think it was like an online release. Oh, I see. Okay. Quick fun fact about that song. I guess, so I don't remember exactly when the Dave Chappelle skit happened. It might have been in 2012 or earlier or so. In the following year, in 2014, Dave Chappelle was on Jimmy Fallon. And so the thing is that Prince, for the single Breakfast Can Wait, for the album cover of it, he used a picture of Dave Chappelle dressed as Prince holding pancakes. And Jimmy Fallon, I guess, was wondering, like, hey, Dave, how do you feel about Prince using your image on, like, the album art? And Dave Chappelle said, quote, "That's a Prince judo move right there. You can make fun of Prince in a sketch, and he'll just use you in his album cover. What am I going to do, sue him for using a picture of me dressed up like him? That's checkmate right there." So, that's a fun fact about that.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Okay, let's move on, listeners.
Okay.
This episode is getting long.
Sorry.
So let's talk about John Barry from the Beastie Boys.
He was a person.
He was a person. That's correct. He died on May 14th, and he was age 52. That's even younger than Prince.
Yeah.
But not as young as Fife Dog.
Nope.
So John Barry was a founding member of the Beastie Boys, if you didn't know. In his final days, he suffered from a little something called frontal lobe dementia, which sounds horrible. He did leave the group after they released their first EP, Polywog Stew, in 1982. So I guess that's interesting. He was one of the founding members when he left after the first EP. He is credited, however, with coming up with the group's name. And when they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2012, Adam Jantsch, who at the time was dying of cancer, he wrote a speech honoring John Barry for his important role in forming the group. So anyway, we're going to play a clip from that EP I just mentioned, Pollywog Stew. I guess we'll just go ahead and play a clip of the opening track called Beastie Boys.
Yeah, it's funny listening to this EP because I like the Beastie Boys, but this EP is very much more punk than anything that I recall from them, even from their first or second album. So I'm wondering if their sound kind of changed, obviously, after he left.
I don't really know the Beastie Boys that well, admittedly.
Hey, that's Peter, just me. They fought for your right to party.
That is true. They did. did you have any? Did you have anything in particular you wanted to discuss with John Barry?
No, to be honest, I know Adam Jantsch passed away a couple of years ago. I don't remember.
Well, like I said, he was battling cancer in 2012, so.
Yeah. But yeah, no, John Barry was influential in founding the band. Unfortunately, he was not with them for very long, but he was with them long enough to, A, name the band, and obviously kind of help found the very unique Beastie Boys sound. I mean, even at the height of their fame, they, in the, I guess, rock, rap genre, whatever you could classify them as, they always had a very unique sound about them, and he was influential in that, so.
Well, I think that's kind of another, and again, that's probably why they were so popular, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, as much as I like the Beastie Boys, I don't know a ton about them biographically. So, I don't want to make up more facts than I already have on this show. So,
It's an interesting point that he left so soon after helping form the band, and then it became so well known. Because, I mean, how often do you hear about that? Because usually, I mean, for example, with Maurice White, we were talking about earlier, he formed the band basically, and he was with them as long as he physically could. And to me, it seems like unless you're a group like the Temptations, where the lineup changes every 6 months, then you know the founding member or members usually stick around the entire time.
Yeah, very good point. That'd be an interesting future episode, actually, is like our members of bands that left early on before they became famous, and kind of missed out on that. That'd be kind of funny. Yeah, go look up the Beastie Boys. They're good. And they fought for your right to party. And they also fought for your right to not sleep until you get to Brooklyn.
So that's where that right came from.
I know. It over once while I was sleeping while driving. I said, yo, I got the right to sleep until I get to Brooklyn. To not sleep until I get to Brooklyn. Whatever. God. Rambling.
Either way.
So John Barry, Beastie Boys, Pollywog Stew. I keep thinking Pollywag from fucking Pokemon. Do you think in the Pokemon universe that, I always thought about this, in the Pokemon universe, you catch Pokemon, you make them fight, there's gotta be certain subsets of Pokemon that you eat, because they're the only animals in that universe, and humans have to eat animals to survive, so what Pokemon do they eat, you know?
Well, a lot of people would argue that you don't need to eat animals to survive, Prince being one of them.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Peter.
I'm just kidding. I love meat more than anything. Maybe when they like get old and they can't fight anymore, they eat them.
it's like a horse in the glue factory. It's like, I'm sorry, you can't fight anymore. They just like blow him away with a shotgun.
The horse can't fight anymore. Are there? I don't think, I guess the answer to this is no, because it's a terrible thing to do. I don't know if there's any animals in real life that are primarily used for fighting. I guess not.
Chickens, kind of.
And you can eat those.
I don't think there's any animal that's bred for fighting, because I think most of the world has been like, hey, that's not cool.
Yeah, so let's all boycott Pokemon for animal cruelty.
Oh god, they tried to do that in the 90s. Don't get them started again.
I'm sure they did. Yeah, because that's definitely going to come up again after somebody hears it on this show.
Exactly. Someone's like, oh yeah, god damn it.
Let's talk about Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, okay.
And not Pikachu nuggets.
Electrifying. The next artist on our list that has passed away, which oddly was apparently the summer of 2016 was okay for artists because no one died in the summer.
At least no one in this list.
Yes, no one noticed. Leonard Cohen passed away November 10th. He was 82. Very famous artist. He was born in Montreal. Yeah, he was kind of a folk artist. Rose to fame with people like Neil Young, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez. He had kind of a very somber sound about him. Very deep, kind of sad, sorrowful voice.
Not unlike his peers, I suppose.
Yeah, true. Folk music was never really happy music, if you think about it. Because folks weren't happy. And because of this kind of more dark, somber tone, a lot of people compared him often to Johnny Cash as well. Mm. Who could be argued that he was kind of like country folk. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like Johnny Cash, and I hate country, so whenever people call Johnny Cash country, I get mad, even though deep down I know he's truly country.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Leonard Cohen, very famous folk artist. He had really famous songs like Suzanne, I'm Your Man, and his most famous song, Hallelujah, which was made re-famous by being in the first Shrek movie. That's actually where I first learned and heard that song. It's really sad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that song was covered by Jeff Buckley, and I can't speak. I think they played the Jeff Buckley cover in Shrek, not the original Leonard Cohen version, which made me sad. But yeah, I prefer Leonard Cohen's version better, actually, after listening to it. Obviously, he wrote the original song, so maybe he could put more feeling into it. But his voice, as I said, is very somber sounding. I guess similarity to David Bowie, he actually released his final album, You Want It Darker, just weeks before he died. So he was still he was still kicking at 82. Now, because Hallelujah is arguably Leonard Cohen's most famous song, I wanted to play a little clip of it. I did actually find a version that he sung very recently, so you can kind of hear him sing his most famous song now in his older years, whatever. But it's very haunting. If they played that version in Shrek, kids would cry. He'd be like, Mommy, is Shrek gonna die?
You know, and then he would have died, and then we wouldn't have had, like, 8 movies after that.
But Shrek is love, Shrek is... Oh, don't even get me started. Fuck Shrek 5, or whatever they're on now, I don't even know. Not to go on another tangent, I think DreamWorks kind of pulled Pixar into that hole. Let's just make a bunch of sequels, because DreamWorks... of the two studios started doing that shit before Disney did. I mean, technically no, because technically Pixar did Toy Story 2, but that doesn't count. DreamWorks are doing Shrek 3, 4, 5. Sorry,
there's a difference between making a sequel and making
a shitty
8 sequels.
Yeah.
To something.
And to the point that the last one is like released like direct DVD kind of shit.
Yeah.
You know it's so bad they couldn't even get it in theaters. But yeah, I mean, now they have Kung Fu Panda 3. They have... Well, Unchained Dragons 2 wasn't actually bad, so I won't fault that one. But I think they kind of... The success of those sequels kind of pulled Pixar in the direction of, like, maybe we can start just sequelizing some of our more popular characters.
I'm probably going to get a lot of hate mail. Well, no, because no one listens, so it's fine. I did not care for Finding Dory whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's discuss.
Well, we need to finish the episode, but
touche.
I'll just say quickly that I like Finding Nemo. It was never my favorite Pixar movie by any means. I think it was I I still think it's a really enjoyable movie. It's just my opinion. I don't know if there's anything objective I can say about like why Finding Dory was bad. I think as a sequel to Finding Nemo, I think it was well done. I just couldn't get into it, I guess.
I mean, I kind of get that. If Finding Nemo wasn't one of your favorite Pixar movies, them making a sequel to it, you're not going to be super moved by it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I liked Finding Nemo. Arguably, it is one of my favorite movies, so that's why we're on the opposite end of the spectrum here. Yeah. I didn't like Finding Dory as much as I like Finding Nemo, I will say that. But yeah. I think as an emotional arc of a Pixar movie, it was well done. They had the famous, you know, mm-hmm. bitch is gonna cry scene that they always have in their movies. It's just me in the theater, and like that scene comes up, I'm like, oh, bitch is gonna cry!
Mommy, what's that man doing? Why is he naked? Why is he standing in the middle of the movie? Kyle's just sobbing. I don't know where I came up with all that.
Sobbing while tearing my clothes off. No, Dory, no.
Bitch is gonna cry. Oh, good Lord. We need to finish this episode.
Yeah, so, yeah. Long story short, I liked Finding Dory. You didn't. Tell us what you think about Finding Dory, listeners, on our Facebook page.
Did we play a clip from Hallelujah yet?
No, we should. Remember.
Okay.
Hallelujah, this episode's almost over.
The Major Lift, the Baffled King, composing Hallelujah.
All right, one more person in our list. This one was very recent, November 18th, not even a month ago. Sharon Jones died at the age of 60. We already did kind of discuss this a little bit one or two episodes ago. But just to recap, Sharon Jones was the lead singer of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, who are a contemporary, like, soul throwback band. On Daptone Records. It's great because they're one of those groups where if you listen to them, you would assume that they were, if you didn't know, you would assume that they were from like the 60s or something. Mm-hmm. But you know, they've been making music for the past few years. And it's pretty great to see people bring back that sound. So that makes it kind of extra sad that she passed away. She was diagnosed with bile duct cancer in 2013. I've never even heard of that. So she had surgery for that, which actually delayed the release of the group's fifth album, Give the People What They Want. In the years following, that diagnosis was changed to stage 2 pancreatic cancer. And so she had to start undergoing chemotherapy, which caused her hair loss. So for a time, she was actually performing bald because she refused to wear wigs, which is, I find that kind of cool mm-hmm. that she didn't see that as like a reason to stop or, you know, something that had to be hidden, mm-hmm. you know, especially for some of her age. It's almost, I wouldn't say expected, but it's not completely shocking that someone her age would be battling cancer. And I do know that I remember seeing her at least a few times. She, you know, she was bald. I remember it crossing my mind I remember making a mental note of it, but I didn't really think about like, oh, she has cancer. Like, I just didn't really think about it. Yeah. I thought maybe it was just, like, a style or something.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I think when she was in, when they were in Luke Cage, I think she was bald in that as well.
I think you're right, yeah.
During the screening of her documentary in the 2015 Toronto International Film Festival, she actually did reveal that her cancer had returned, because I guess it had kind of, like, receded a bit. Yeah. But then it was kind of coming back, and that she would be doing some more chemo. And then the night of the U.S. Presidential election results were coming in, she had a stroke while watching said election results. And then she had another one the following day. And it's a little humorous because she did remain alert and lucid during the initial period of her hospital stay. And actually jokingly claimed that the news of Donald Trump's victory was responsible for her stroke. And then she died 10 days later on the 18th.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I guess I'm in a, obviously I'm not glad that she died, but I'm glad that, like, you know, as her health was declining, that she was still staying
positive
and kind of joking around.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, and as I said on our previous episode that we discussed it briefly, I am glad that she had that opportunity to, you know, finally, even if it was in the later years of her life, that she was able to kind of break out musically and do that, because she had wanted to do that for most of her life, just didn't have the opportunity.
Yeah.
So, what is the song that you chose for Sharon Jones, Kyle?
I thought about picking one of her Christmas songs, because that was one of her later final recordings, but since we did review that album last year, I picked instead a cover she did of the song Midnight Rider that I really like. So.
Cool. Well, let's give a little listen to that, listeners. So again, that was Midnight Rider, as performed by Sharon Jones with the Dap Kings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of anyone who's died since then that would be relevant for this list.
Knock on wood. As of the air date of this, or the recording date.
As of December 10th.
Yeah. I know you mentioned in talking about her that she had a documentary out. I was actually just looking a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah.
The documentary is called Miss Sharon Jones. It actually came out to a wide release in August of 2016. And it's just kind of similar to the documentary that we've talked about before about Charles Bradley. It just chronolizes, is that a word? Documentizes.
Documents?
That word. Words are hard. Her musical career and her growing fame and how she got into music and what she was doing before then and all that stuff. So it's kind of just a biography of sorts, but
that's cool.
I'm going to check it out. And I hope your listeners do too.
Is that what you linked to me shortly before we started?
Yeah, I sent you the trailer.
Cool. Do you know like what kind of distribution, like, is it?
I don't think
on
it's
Netflix,
like,
or something, or
I don't know. If it'll eventually be on Netflix, because I know Charles Bradley's, documentary was at one point, but hopefully
Doesn't appear to be there right now.
Yeah, no.
So
yeah,
that hopefully wraps up our list for this year
of the dead.
Of yeah,
yeah.
Let's hope that 2017 isn't quite so
deadly,
terrible. Yeah,
yeah.
But you never know.
Truth. So yeah,
something you do know
is that we're on Facebook.
Is that we're. Oh, you know me well.
Yep.
If we missed any famous musicians who died this year, obviously, like we said, we didn't cover everybody. But if there's someone you really like that we didn't mention, let us know on Facebook. Try to be polite, but if you want to be angry, then go ahead. We just want to hear from you. At facebook.com/getyourfunk. If you're listening to this on SoundCloud, at soundcloud.com/getyourfunk. You can click follow, and then you can write angry things to us on this track as a comment. Or you can send us a message there too. That's fine. So far, the only messages I've ever gotten on SoundCloud are like, I'm a naughty girl and I want to meet you type of messages. And it's strange how many of those I've gotten, considering it's SoundCloud.
Yeah, like are there a lot of people meeting on SoundCloud? It's not a dating site.
No. I mean, obviously it's just BS, but I don't know why SoundCloud is like the platform that somebody's using for that.
I know, right?
Anyway, if you have something else to say other than you're a naughty girl, then tell it on SoundCloud. you can also follow us on mixcloud.com/getyourfunk if you want, like, our more what do you call it, like, back catalog of episodes. You can't really comment on that. It's not really a social site, but if you like just knowing when stuff comes out and knowing that it won't get taken down after a few weeks, like SoundCloud, because we can only have, I think, 3 total hours at a time.
I was going to say, this audio episode's going to take up half of that.
Without paying. So I need to stop talking so that we can fit more than 2 episodes on our account. Thanks for listening. I think we decided we're going to have 1 more episode before the year wraps up.
Yep.
So stay tuned to figure out what we decide to do for that.
Yeah.
This has been your host, Peter.
And this has been your host, Kyle.
Bye.
We love you.